Yeah, we're getting catch up.
Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, thanks.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawahis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tohiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody, this is Bluewater coming to you from Booger County in Mid-America in the Ozarks Plateau. Our guest this evening for this week, and the show will begin on the website on the morning of the 26th of June, is Ted Silverham. Ted is a well-known, I guess they call you a psychic in the white world, and we would call you a seer.
Yes.
I guess I found out about you because Mad Bear Anderson was a friend of my teacher, Roland Thunder, and you're married to Roland Thunder's daughter. Is that correct?
That's true.
And Mad Bear, the year he passed away, well, let me digress a little bit. I'm 49 now. Back in 1985, I was 40, and I had known since age 16, you know, exactly who my Cherokee ancestors were. But I never followed up on the culture, fully intended to, but, you know, people just don't know how to go about doing these things. So a full-blood Indian appeared to me in a dream, and he had a white stone, kind of a clearish white opaque stone around his neck on a chain, and there was a key embedded in the stone, and his name could be seen in the stone. And I wasn't allowed to remember what his name was when I woke up from the dream, but he just said to me, when are you going to do something? about, and he mentioned my ancestor's name, you know, about this man's genealogy. So it kind of gave me a kick in the pants, and then I realized here recently it may have been Mad Bear, because in 1998, when I finally got around to being able to afford to read that book by Doug Boyd about Mad Bear, I realized that Mad Bear was in the process of writing an encyclopedia of prophecies, and felt it was a very important thing to do. And of course, by that time, I had assembled a way. Well, first I had a 16-page, hard copy newsletter, and that got bigger. Finally, went on the net, but then I learned later about the relationship between Mad Bear and my teacher, Rolling Thunder. So I'm wondering if that person that appeared to me in the dream wasn't Mad Bear. But anyway, I found out from somebody that you had a close relationship with Mad Bear and got in touch with you, and here we are. So, tell us a little bit about Mad Bear and Rolling Thunder, and I understand you're a North Carolina Tuscarora, correct?
Yes, we are still associated with Six Nations, and I tell you, I'll go back a little bit further back when Bear was a little boy, according to his sister that passed over a couple of years ago, and she says that Bear, he was, in going to school, he was sort of like shorter than the rest of the kids. And, you know, Mad Bear never did like dogs. He was always afraid of dogs. And the kids would be walking up ahead of him, and he would always lag her behind. And his mother had made this overcoat for him that was like a little bit too long. And when he would walk, he looked like a bear. And so one day he was lagging behind, and all of a sudden these dogs saw this little kid with this overcoat on. It was in the winter time. And he was lagging behind, and all of a sudden the dogs came out to attack this thing. And there goes Bear running up the road there, you know. Wallace was running up the road trying to catch up, and I think the dogs kind of jumped all over him pretty rough. And that was one of the stories that she tells. But Bear was a sort of a controversial person, and matter of fact, a few years after he had passed, I was in the kitchen and talking to the lady who went with Bear to Cuba, because, you know, Fidel Castro invited Mad Bear over for the Free Revolutionary Parade, and so he tried to invite a lot of Native people over, but Bear was the only one that accepted. And she said that they flew into Miami, and then there was another plane that they flew from Miami to Cuba. And Bear was always a jokester, you know, and so you could never really believe what was going to happen. So he said to her, "Hey, start, go back and change clothes, because." I know what it was. When they were getting off the plane, everybody's getting off the plane, he said, "Now change into your regalia, you know, change into it." So he put his ribbon shirt on and stuff, you know. And he says, "There's going to be a lot of people there." She says, "Oh, you know, Wally, you know, you just probably get it." He says, "Oh, no, the press is going to be there." So when he came off the plane, they had all of these photographers, Cuban photographers, around taking pictures. And then Castro came up and shook hands with Mad Bear. And he called the woman that went with Bear, he called her a little American girl. And so they took her to the hotel, this fanciest hotel in town. And the next day was the big parade. And apparently, it just was so hot, and you know, in those days, Fidel Castro used to talk for like 6 hours nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt fainted. She had to take it back to the hotel. So when he did come to the hotel, he asked me, he says, "What happened?" She says, "You know, you just, she says, you just talk such a awfully long time."
Mm-hmm.
So hot. And So then, so they had dinner, and then there met with Fidel Castro in his private chamber, and they talked a bit. And he was trying to get the First Nations people, he wanted them to rally a lot, you know, in our own cause. But then, that's just one small story about Matt Bear, because, you know, Matt Bear had photographs taken with Mao Zedong, Fidel Castro, Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr.
Oh, yeah.
This man was everywhere. And also, he had told me by the time that he found out that I used to read for Elvis, he had photographs of him and Elvis. So, I mean, Bear could travel, you know, he could travel without his suitcase.
Yeah.
As we said. And he would tell me, he says, you know, he says, Teddy, he says, you know, I when I go, I don't know where I'm going some days until when I get ready to go, I just be driving down the road and I pull over the side and I'm just gone. I leave and then somebody drives the truck out of the car back home. See, his home where he lived at in Tuscarora was like a little German bunker. You know, he has little small windows.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he built the house was built and everything. And he would, and I remember the time that when Rolling Thunder hit, we were out someplace and RG said that he had to get in touch with Matt Bear. And when he would like go outside and about, he had his pipe. And then we were somewhere, I think because in Southern California somewhere, he went out on the balcony and shade his pipe. In about 3 hours, just knock the door, bam, 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 open the door, bam, bam. Where's RG? Where's RG?
Oh my gosh. For the benefit of the listeners, RG was Rolling Thunder, and Matt Bear's first name was Wallace, Matt Bear Anderson.
Yeah. And but Matt Bear also said that, you know, he was a cause of that 1985 blackout in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happened was that they had taken, in that Hoover Dam project, that they had taken a lot of the land away, and they were trying to build a highway through parts of Onondaga.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got a ceremony, and he caused that blackout. And he said he was going to pull it through. He said he was going to do it. This is not something that was done. And then later he said he did it. He said he was going to do it.
Yeah.
And he did it. And Matt Bear, he says to me, he says he is Tuscarora, and he is Six Nations. And that he knew all of the secrets of Six Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, Bear was as comfortable over Six Nations in Canada, or in Lewiston, New York, or in down in Johnny Creek Reservation down in North Carolina. He knew everybody's business.
Now, the Tuscarora in North Carolina, are they state recognized?
Yeah, they're getting state recognition.
Because I know at that time,
I think it's recognized down in the, state recognized now in North Carolina.
Right.
And
at the time, though, I don't think they had any, and
right.
And I guess he had created the Haudenosaunee passport.
Yes, and was, yes, which I have covered.
And it was trying to get recognition for the North Carolina Tuscarora,
yes,
which was hard.
You see, in North Carolina, they have 15 factions. They have 15 factions of Tuscaroras. And you got that, and but the only ones that really ever come together at one time, because we always seem to come together and we break apart. And so it's only been three together, but then something happens, we break apart, and we never really come together as a whole.
But see, that's always a problem. That's always a problem with Native people. We're our own worst enemies.
That's true. That's true.
Well, I guess he visited, it was 1959 or 60, I guess the Miccosukees were trying to get recognition, and the government was just ignoring them.
Yeah.
So Mad Bear just said, okay, well, he knew that Fidel Castro had Native background, so he just said, all right, well, we'll just, you know, see if Fidel will be interested in a treaty. So Fidel was a trickster too, and
when Fidel is a brilliant man, he's a medical doctor, and he's a brilliant man in areas of, and I think that had it not been, he probably would have been an ally of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
had it not been that Eisenhower said he would talk to him, to talk, he would talk to only to Batista.
Yeah.
And so the only place he could go was to Russia, because remember, when Castro took over Cuba, they were colored white drinking fountains.
Yeah.
Then he took him to Havana. And his thing was, I'm not here trying to make Fidel the god or something, scarefully and peaceful in his pocket. I'm just saying that his philosophy was to put Cuba back in the hands of the Cubans, and to take it out of the hands of the mafia that had taken over the casinos and things. And so he only had one place to turn, and that was to Russia. And so, I know I don't want to get Cubans and people uproar, because I'm only sharing about the areas of where he had invited all native people to come to the First Revolutionary Parade, but he couldn't get anybody to go. And when they did get back from Havana, they were stopped, and Matt Bear says that the Buffalo police, they harassed him an awful lot. Which by the time they flew back by private jet to Miami, and then they connected in Miami for the plane back to Buffalo, and they went through an awful lot. Everywhere they were always stopping, especially Bear, and searching him. And then at one time they would let Bear into Canada, because they said that the Indians were quiet in Canada, and every time Bear would come over, even go to Six Nations, he would start up problems. And they wanted the Indians to stay quiet. That's how they said it.
So they violated the Jay Treaty and wouldn't let them cross.
Oh, yeah, well, you see, the Jay Treaty, the way that Canada gets around the Jay Treaty was given to it was made with the United States and England. That was before Canada was a country.
Mm.
So that's how they get around the Jay Treaty. And this is why the U.S. recognized Canadian Indians, but Canada does not recognize us.
Mm.
So until that, and the Jay Treaty has been in the courts now for the last 30 years.
Hmm.
And this is why that Mike Mitchell has tested the Jay Treaty, and he was the grand chief of it, the deputy grand chief of the Mohawks. And he has tested that and has been locked up with this, you know, taking just food across the border. And we tested the areas of the Supreme Court. He's a pretty brilliant man. But getting back to Bear and Rolla Thunder, I know in his book, the book that Carmen, his third wife, wrote, she says that Mad Bear was Harkin's teacher, and she did have that wrong, because neither one taught the other anything. They were on the same equal level.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's where I differed with that, because they were able to share and just say that Seymour was a very close, and also Martin Highbear. They were all close, and Peter Mitten and Bema Logan, they used to all travel together in the old days. And they used to travel all over. I mean, RT and Bear, they went to Australia. And
did you happen to see Mad Bear's? You remember that 6-hour miniseries, The Native Americans?
Yes, I know they had. I didn't see it.
They flashed his face across. Yeah. They credited him with the founding of the modern Indian Unity Movement, which spawned AIM.
Yes.
But they didn't mention his name, you know.
Yeah. But Bear was always into everything. Something that was going on, he was into it, whether he founded it or he was a person to take part, because Bear didn't back away from anything. I remember when he said that when the women did the beadwork for his bolo with the bear hanging out, was his symbol was Mad Bear. But and that's when he had to wear that beaded brooch that one of the women over in Tuscarora made for him.
Mm-hmm. That's the one that's on the cover of the book.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. And but there had so many, there's so many stories that in the book didn't really, I don't think the book, and well, I can't say too much because it really, I scanned the book, but he had so many unusual stories. I mean, this guy, like I said, I'm not saying he could walk on water, but we all knew that he could travel without his suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And he was a good teacher. But then also he would talk in circles, and if he didn't want you to know what he's talking about, you could never figure out what he was talking about. The other people knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, they call it circumlocution.
Yes.
And think of Matt, Rolling Thunder did the same thing. And,
yeah.
And if he didn't want, you know, if you had the keys, if he had taught you a few keys, then you'd understand what he's talking about.
That's what he's talking about.
The guy sitting next to you wouldn't have a clue. That's how the elders work.
That's true. Yeah.
But he was also a merchant mariner.
Yes, Bear went to, I think he told me he had a son in China somewhere. I think he had a son in China or something, because he was a merchant seaman, yeah.
And he
had traveled all over.
He contacted the elders all over the world and
yeah.
To bring people together, to bring that prophecy, that rune of prophecy about the condor. And the Condor of the South and the
yes.
Mixed the tears with the Eagles of the North.
Yes.
Yeah, he was a pivotal figure. He really was. And he
yes, and he had a very bad sugar. He was a diabetic just mm-hmm. like R.T. And he didn't take care of himself. But then most medicine people, they help others, but they don't ever have time for themselves.
That's right.
And he had severe areas of sugar that was really rough. And he shared knowledge with, he had a couple of favorites that he had, another young man that's around that he had shared knowledge with. And I mean, he had a few people that he sat down to really share knowledge with and talk with. He was always a good talker, and he also had a hideout, we always call them hideouts, he had a hideout in North Carolina, had another hideout in Arizona, because he would go and disappear in Arizona. And stay there for a while, and then we always said if it got too hot for Bear, then he would come back up to Lewiston and go into Six Nations, and then he'd be down in Maxon, North Carolina. So he always had his places.
Yeah, well, these elders, you know, they make a they made a lot of sacrifices, and then, you know, there are some people that dare to accuse him of evil things, and
did people don't understand the way people are. The first thing they do is call him a witch, because they did not understand a person's way. And we, as First Nation people, we do have a tendency to call people witches if we don't know what they are, because they are given unusual gifts. Because these people are. They are cut from a different branch of the tree, and they don't fit in like everybody else. They're different. But the Creator made his special ones a bit different, and they're not supposed to fit in. And whether that sometimes if you say they shift shape and to fly, and if they fly like a bird or like an eagle, then they can do it. And a lot of people, like, given that, but you got to understand that we're all energy, and the only thing that keeps us focused is the eye, because all of us is just energy. But if you know that secret, you can use the secret, and you can chip shape, and you can go into another animal if you know how to do that ceremony, and then you can fly with the eagles, you know, and you can go places, So that's why we say that, like back in Tuscarora, they used to always say that. You see, somebody would find Mad Bear's truck, or in the old days he had a truck, then he had a car, he had an old Buick or something. And then they would find it on the side of the road, and they would, the keys be in it, they drive back to his house, park it in the yard, and he'd be gone. But that's how he would go. And then he'd end up wherever he's going to be. He'd be here, knocking on your door, coming in, talking to you. And like, and RT had that gift to light up his pipe and call in people. And I remember when he did it to his daughter that time. We were sitting in North Carolina one time eating at the table. And she gets up, she says, I got to call Daddy. And she calls and he says, he answers the phone, he says, I lit my pipe 15 minutes ago. And she says, well, look, Daddy, it takes some time for it to cross the mountains to get outside. You know? But he was a little impatient, but I've seen him bring things to him in the car. The pipe, I mean, the tobacco, the pipe and stuff. And I remember seeing it right there on the kitchen table. This is the RT. And I seen it right there on the kitchen table. We went out and got in the car. And I don't know why that I didn't pick it up. And then, because I was the last one out of the house, and it was lit right there in front of me. And I saw it, and I didn't touch it because he would get upset you didn't touch his stuff. And he had already gotten in the car. I talked to some people, and he got in the car. So when I got in the car, I went on down the road. And then we got on the other side of Winnemucca. He started looking. He says, where's my tobacco? Where's my pipe? I said, I saw it on the table. And I know I was the last one out of the house. But I really saw it there. But then I don't know why I wouldn't pick it up, except I know he didn't like me to touch certain things. And then, about 5 minutes later, he's back there cupping, and he's cupping on his pipe. Mm-hmm. The pocket, he got it. We brought it to him. He brought it to him, yeah.
Well, I know when shortly before my wife, first wife, passed away, I would get a lot, and even up to a year ago, I would hear in my sleep, bam, 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 on the wall, you know. And I didn't know what it meant for a long time until I read Doug Boyd's book, and Mad Bear said that the little elementals would come bang on the wall, and he would know it was time to go to sleep and have a conference with the elders. And it was really fun. I've had this happen. I drove semi for a couple of years after moving to the country just to survive. But anyway, I was at a truck stop and just had laid down in the afternoon for a little nap, and I hear bam, 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 you know, and I immediately jumped up and wondered who's beating on my door. And, you know, I was so far out in the edge of the truck stop, there were, there wasn't any way that anybody could have gotten, but, you know, I thought, oh, well, maybe somebody was fooling me. But then it happened, I was out in the middle of Wyoming, and there wasn't anybody around for miles. And, you know, 4 o'clock one morning, I heard the bam, bam, bam. So, you know, I... But the real mystery that I'm trying to solve is that the year before my wife passed, and the year after she passed, on the 26th of December, about 2 o'clock in the morning, before and after the year she passed away, so it would have been, you know, the Christmas of 94 and the Christmas of 96,
yeah.
No, Christmas of 95, I smelled tobacco smoke in the house, and they were houses that were, you know, 1,000 miles apart, and houses that had never been smoked in. So I'm trying to figure out. So I keep asking people, you know, what's the December 26th? I wanted to know if it had anything to do with, you know, Lonely Thunder or maybe Mad Bear, or maybe I'll find out something.
Basically, RT, because RT is one who just smoked the corn cob pipe, the tobacco, and he always comes in the form of tobacco smoke. That's how you know he's around.
Mm.
And that was his mark of coming, because he used to always say also that before he would come into a city, he might send a big rainstorm. Or if he would dare to leave the city, when he would leave, it would be a big one rainstorm. It either come before or when he would leave, in any place he would go. But his pipe, he always signaled his arrival was due to tobacco smoke. And if he, even he left and went into spirit, walked on into spirit world, his tobacco, his pipe, and even though he had quit smoking years before that, but his tobacco smoke, even he would send it to places where I would be and things when I had some problems with a person that was giving me some problems. I remember way back there. And how he could say, how he could turn things. I would give you one example. Before he died, there was a big hurricane that was supposed to hit North Carolina. And so he told us, he says, because they had all said the weather, everybody says it was going to hit dead on into the areas of North Carolina, into the eastern part of Carolina, where I used to live. That was when I was married to his wife, to his daughter. And so he says, I'm going to turn that hurricane. I'm going to turn it away so it won't even touch you guys. So he said, you don't even have to even go to the store to buy water and nothing. The people are buying water and everything like crazy. I believe what he said, but I did take the car and park it parallel right against the garage door. So if it did blow, nothing would happen. We do believe not even a leaf fell off the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But it did hit South Carolina. It did hit South Carolina. But it did not touch us at all. I can't think of the name of that particular one, but that happened about 9-10 years ago, that particular hurricane. And he turned it from Nevada. He was in Nevada, and he was able to turn it. And this is the type of gifts that this man had. I mean, when he would come in off the road, and because there always be so many people at the house, he would go across the little road, little street, over to the other building he had over there. And he would go to sleep in that room, and you'd go up to the window and look and see the rattlesnakes crawled all up on him. And that they would sleep on him. And he would also keep his money there and keep his old newspapers. He collected his newspapers and things. And you could look through the window and see the snake sleeping on him and beside him, because his gift, his power, he called his magic, was with rattlesnake.
Mm-hmm.
And
Rolling Thunder also, I understand, is snake man.
Yeah, this is what I'm talking about, Rolling Thunder.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I got lost
track. Rolling Thunder, and he had snake medicine. And his gift was rattlesnakes. And also, you know, he was very close to Higgy Casey. And he was at Casey's bedside when Casey died in 1945.
You're kidding. Rolling Thunder?
Yeah, well, R.G. was. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, he, what's that guy's name? He said, Oh, you know, in the old days, the Archie was a pretty old fellow. He was, he lived a long time ago, and he knew, who's that guy's name?
Alameda Sequoia?
Huh?
His teacher in North Carolina was Alameda Sequoia.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. But he also knew Bonnie Clyde.
Oh, yeah, that would have been back in the 30s.
Yeah, he knew that.
Okay, and, he grew up in those hills.
Oh yeah, he grew
in eastern Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, Missouri, and all of those places, and he used to be a hobo before,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he used to travel, and then of course when he joined the railroad, he worked out in Nevada, but he was also very close to Shoshone people,
mm-hmm.
and Spotted Pine was Shoshone. That was his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and But he traveled a lot, and that's when he used to always speak it. When he was close to, like you said, Agakazin, he used to always speak it A-R-E.
Huh.
Also. And, but then Light Night, was it Look? No, Light Magazine, they flew him to, Africa, and where he met with some of the medicine, what do you call it, witch doctors there. And they did a thing, with a Native American medicine man and an African witch doctor. And what they did, they compared, they used the same herbs, they just only had different names, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they, Life Magazine, did a big story about that. And so how American medicine man, I mean, American Indian and an African witch doctor, but how they made certain medicines and stuff. They were the same as we made the same medicines, only they just had different names for the same plants,
mm-hmm.
because the same plants were the same. And also, Archie said that if you notice their beadwork, only the colors of their beadwork is different. But from ours, but we do the same type of beadwork. And they have their own plants, like they have elephant plants and stuff, where we have our own plants. And they're from different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but,
Well, I knew one of his friends, I knew a lady that lives in Celina, Utah, that drove him out to a gathering in South Jordan, Utah, in August of 1972. And I remember Rowan Fetter talking about this, because it was going to be a big thing, because, and he said that the police met them just as you're coming into the Salt Lake Valley and wouldn't let any of the Indians, you know, go downtown. They made them skirt the west side of the Salt Lake Valley, and they had to drive all the way down to the south end of the valley.
Which, yeah.
And but they were treated very, very badly. And I understand that the gates of Temple Square were closed, and they had armed guards on the gates. You see, Mormons know, you know, it says in the Second Nephi chapter 2 that when the Book of Mormon was originally footnoted, that there would be a future Indian seer. And Brigham Young said that when the time came, after all the changes and judgments that came down on this country, that the Mormons, the whites, would only assist the Indians in rebuilding the country. So Mad Bear, because of the way they were treated at that powwow, he said that there would be a major earthquake within a 50-mile radius of Salt Lake City. And on the 18th of August, he said that a gentle rain would fall the next day. And you know, it doesn't rain in August in Salt Lake, much less a gentle female rain. And boy, it did on the 19th. Here it came. But this friend of mine that drove him out to that gathering said that when they reached, I guess it's Immigration Canyon, they were coming in on I-80. And you can just start to see the valley. And he made her stop and said, "Oh, stop, you know, pull over." And he got out and looked and then got back in the car. And she said, "Well, what's the matter, Barry?" And he says, "Oh, man, it's so sad because it's so beautiful." And she said, "Well, what are you talking about?" And he says, "Well, because I once had a vision of a great valley that would be flooded, but he never saw the scene in real life. But he recognized the way the mountains were. It's unmistakable when you come into the valley." He said, "I've seen the valley, but it wasn't yet flooded." And he said he just saw it today and shook him up. But Then she took him down downtown and drove him around and saw the Mormon temple for the first time. And he pointed to the gold statue of Moroni on the top. He says, "Oh yeah, I've seen that statue." And he says, "The water's going to reach all the way to the base of the statue." And Orson Scott Card, the science fiction writer, wrote a book called Folk of the Fringe that talked about the flooding that would be to come and people going, you know, diving into the temple in scuba gear and that kind of stuff. But he also said, on the church office building, there's two bas-relief Western Eastern Hemisphere globes. And he says, "Oh yeah, I've seen those come down in an earthquake." And people that have worked in the church office building are told that those are designed to crash into the ground in case of an earthquake.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She is the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff, and I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed, it's convenient, stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable, it's convenient, it tastes really good. Taste the peaches, they're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated and freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond. Put it
under
your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
But you're talking about flooding, and the Hopi elders talk about this, and Gordon Michael Scallion seen it. Everybody that's ever seen, Gloria Del Toy and others that have published Earth Change maps all show Western United States going underwater.
Yeah, matter of fact, the Hopis have already said that the time of purification has already began. They said that last year, and that's why a lot of the Hopis now gone underground, because they said the eastern part of the United States is going to be going down towards they are. But I just wanted to say one more footnote, and that was when you talk about how bad it was in the old days, back in Utah and Nevada. We say the old days were when I'm only going back to over 85. And we used to always say the joke out there was the only Indian loved in Nevada was Wayne, and that was it. And he's the only Indian that sailed Nevada left.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, at that time, I think you could only get gas on the west part of Winnemucca after a certain hour. Because if you were running low on gas, you got to Reno, you were okay. But you had problems if you were running low before Reno. Because you didn't get gas.
Mm.
That's a fact. At least at certain times at night. But getting back to Mad Bear, and like I said, Bear traveled so much, and he knew so many people and all over the world, and to where just looking at photographs that I saw of that he had taken with these foreign leaders like Mosley Kahn and stuff, to where in those days you could semi-impose any pictures over another picture like they can do in photography now. This was old photography, which meant he was there. You know, nowadays you could probably make a picture of you and the president, and you could really use the trick photography, but in those days, it's not, you know, so I'm saying all that to say, these were the tricks. And when he was with John Kennedy, I mean, he had pictures of all these guys, he was standing beside. And so this is why that I saw these things with my own eyes. And so, it's just that he was just at different places at different times, and he met with all of these different people. And I don't think that anybody could really tell the real story of Bear. There's so many stories of Bear. I know, I remember one guy tried to insult me once, and he said, you know, Bear was a fake or something. I said, well, you know, I've heard Bear being a great medicine man. I have heard that he was a con artist. He was a trickster. And you say he was a fake. And other people, I say, you know, it takes all of those things to spell Mad Bear.
Mm-hmm.
Because this man had so many unusual gifts. And he could do so many things. And again, because people did not quite understand him, but he sure got attention and he got respect from everybody. And he was very respected with Six Nations among his own people. And when you're respected among your own people, you give a rat's tail about what the rest of the world would think.
Yeah.
But it's like Bear said, nobody bothered with me, did they?
Mm-mm.
And that's a fact.
Nope,
that's
sure
right. And with RT, see, Matt Bear, he would get upset, but I think RT, because he was a diabetic too, he would get upset real fast because RT was sort of fussy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Bear was always direct. Well, they were both direct, but he was pretty much direct. I think Peter Mink was about the softest, more gentle. And I remember the time that with Mickey Hart, you know, the Grateful Dead, when he cracked up his car in the canyon, and when they rushed him to the hospital, and they had given Mickey Hart for dead, and the doctor said that when they sent for Mad Bear, I mean, Roland Thunder, RT was over at, what's that guy who did the movie Appaloosa, the Apophysy, what is his name? He did The Godfather 2, Ford Francis.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
he was
a
over
couple.
At Francis Coppola's Ford's restaurant, I mean, ranch. And when they went and got him, got him to the hospital, and the doctors came out, he said, you can bring any medicine man here now. You can't save him. He's gone. RT went into the room. He says, I don't care what you hear. Outside this door, do not come into this room. And he was in this room. You can hear all sorts of animals in that room. And he had the door closed. And about 23 minutes later, Mickey was sitting up in that bed talking. So, and that's a fact that, I mean, this is not just one person, a lot of people were there to witness that. When he argued at that door and walked out, Mickey was sitting up in bed talking.
Well, you know, things like this happen. I know Randall probably wouldn't want me to say anything about it, but for example, he's alive. Randolph is, and he was called to a hospital bed here in the last month. A daughter of a surgeon was dying of cancer. They said she absolutely has hours to live. There's, you know, if you want to bring a medicine man in, fine. And she was in a coma, and he came in, and I can't remember what he did. It was a pipe or an eagle feather, and just made four direction sign on her forehead, and her eyes kind of fluttered, and she says, "Oh, that felt good." And within 20 minutes, she was sitting up in bed, and within 10 days, as he predicted, she was out of the hospital, and she's completely clear of cancer. And James Gillihan's another example. He was a friend of my teacher Red Hat. Jim lost a lung and a kidney to cancer. And then it metastasized and it was all over his body. And he was a Cherokee who grew up among Sioux people. And Fright Fool's Crow sent a couple of medicine men, and they did ceremony, and he was out of the hospital in a couple of weeks, and because of his faith, Fool's Crow let him carry his City Hall's pipe up until just a couple of years ago when he passed away.
Well, you know, the same story about a man by the name of Dan Pine over in Cincinnati, Marie, Canada. And Dan Pine, he's crossed over now. He was a very well-known medicine man. And one of the last people that he worked on was, I remember the guy, I don't know his name, but he used to sing the platters, to have the high voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But the guy had throat cancer. He lived in Detroit, and he was dying. He went to see Dan Pine, and Dan worked on him. And, well, I guess we're going back now about maybe 10 years ago when they opened up one of the wings of the King Wake Casino in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. The guy kept his promise to Dan, and he performed there and sang at that casino, at the grand opening. So, and there were many stories, like when, and matter of fact, the lady there, McCurchill, she was the manager, general manager of the casino, when her husband pushed her into Dan Pine's house in a wheelchair, she had no hair and no fingernails, and they had given her so much time to live, and he talked real soft, he was a very soft-spoken man, he said, oh, my dear, you're not going to go any place, you're not, and he did his work on her, and she, her hair comes down now, I think she cuts it now, but came down to a waist, and not only that, she's the manager of the hotel, I mean, of the casino. Now she works, I think she's a manager in downtown Detroit, I mean, what they call it, retail or something. But she was healed by Dan Pine and his medicines. So, I mean, these are special gifts that Creator has given to many special people, of our people, that they still are walking and talking today. And when I try to tell people, you have to believe in the Creator's gifts. And I'm not saying that Matt Bear or Dan Pine or Rolling Thunder can do it, but they were given gifts to be able to do things to make this a better earth, a better world. And they, when they would do ceremonies and things, like when RT could eat away cancer without touching a person, and they upchuck it into a bucket and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, these, he wasn't going to show off, but he was going to show the magic that the Creator has given.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what people have got to understand, that these people are very special, and they have walked the earth, and there are a lot of new ones walking the earth, because this earth is still going to stand. He's going to go through his different dimensions, I guess, almost different things, like with this stuff going on in Iraq and things. But when it's all said and done, you know, we're still going to stay, we're still going to be a nation here in this country and other nations too. But I'm not saying that there won't be another war, because they could very well be one in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be considered a third world war. And that'll probably last until 2020. And then after that, there's going to be peace. And it could be a peace for like 1,000 years,
mm-hmm.
I think. But those that have gone on ahead of us, those like, you know, Wallace Mann, Barry Anderson, and, or, you know, Roland Thunder, who's John Pope, and speaking of RT and his gift with snakes, snake medicine, he was given that, but also Matt Bear was given the gift where he could touch roots, and he could make, I seen him take a glass of water and put it in a thunderstorm, just put it right by the window, and that's not just lightning, and then he would make a person drink it, and it would heal their illness. I mean, that's part of, you can call it Indian magic or whatever you call it, but it's making medicine.
Just amazing diversity. You know, spirit works in so many, many ways, and John Red Hat talked about how diverse Creator was, and But how, tell us how spirit works with you. Tell us about how you get insight into people's lives and how you do your readings.
Well, you know, a long time ago, when I was a little boy, I was very, very sickly. And because my mother had given me milk, and that milk had changed to, because I was, they call it lactose intolerant, and the milk had given me eczema, and then from there I ended up with asthma. And I was very, very sickly. And one time I was in the bed, and this woman come through the wall, and she sat down on the side of the bed. And I could feel it, and I felt like I was paralyzed. I was about maybe 7, 8 years old. And this lady leaned in, and I could see her leaning in and saying something to me. And she said, "I will be back. Prepare yourself."
Mm.
And then when she got up, you could feel the bed rise up. And she went walking through the wall. And then at that time, I could move, and I ran downstairs, and my father went downstairs. My mother was ironing like she always did. My father was sitting at the table drinking coffee and reading the paper. And I told him what had happened. So my grandmother had told my mother before, a long time ago, that I would be coming. I was going to be sort of special. So anyway, my father says, "Well, he always had a one expression, we'll nip that in the bud." So he made a pallet right at the end of their bed on the floor in their bedroom, and they put all the lights on. And so about 3 or 4 nights later, my father was snoring, my mother was asleep, and this woman came through the wall. And she says, "Let's go." And she pulled my hand, I got up, and I walked right through the wall. And the next thing I knew, I was on this dirt road, and I was walking on this road, and she was pulling me, and she said her name was Bedalvin. And I'll never forget her name, because she had to tell it to me 2 or 3 times, because, you know, being a southern kid, you just didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know too much about what other language you mean. And then the birds were singing, and in the sky, it was like an old-fashioned Technicolor movie. The sky was bluer than blue, the grass was greener than green, there was a brook that was running. You could hear the brook, and she was pulling me along and said, "Make haste, make haste."
Mm-hmm.
We walked for a while, and then we walked up this grassy knoll area, and then there was an ark, and she stood there. She says, "You sit down over there." And when I went to sit down to look at her, then all of a sudden, there was 13 old men were sitting around me. And they would talk with their eyes. See, she talked with her eyes, too. They all talked and listened to what they were saying. And so each of the old men introduced themselves to me, told me who they were. And I just remember, at the end, Tall Pines spoke. This was a different kind. Spoke, and he said, "What did I want?" And I asked him, "Could they make me well? Could he make me well?" And he laughed. He says, "He will be well one day, very healthy, but I had to suffer right now to learn how it was, the changes that I would go through." And then there was another man who was about 8 or 9 feet tall, standing away, and his name was White Eagle. And this guy had white eagle feathers and all of this stuff, and white buckskin. I mean, he was very... So in other words, I'm talking about how I come to meet the council that I often speak of when I talk in the regions and things. But anyway, I just took that to tell you, give you a little bit of... I've been doing this for now about 35 years, and however, my folks would let me, I think I took my first coins at about 12 years old, but then old folks were always suspicious, you know, superstitious, so they would let me, when they heard me talking and doing that, and somebody gave me 50 cents or a dollar, they would let me do it anymore to outside people, because they thought that somebody would steal the magic, as they called it. So, and I didn't really do any reading until about I was 23 years old before they let me. And I was shared knowledge with a lot of the old people, and they would talk to me, but they would just keep the talks within the circle. But what I usually do is when people ask me how I read, I just say usually when I read people, I everything is recorded so that you can, if I talk to you over the telephone, it's all recorded, all in person is recorded, and I talk about the following things, the past, the present, the future, the family, friends, career, relationships, health, and finances. And now I'm what they call a co-reader. In other words, when I talk with a person, I don't ask them anything. I do the talking at first. You know how there's some people, they try to fish out questions and things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do that. I just sit down when you call me and you don't sit down. I tell you first. Then, at the end, then I would ask you, then you ask questions. So in this list I have, I just say, you know, I do work with Power Stones and my spirit council. And the time that I share with people, they vary from individual, and average time is usually 30 to 35 minutes. That when I do my readings or my talking, as I call it. And but I also give you time if you've got notes you want to ask questions, or if you've got photographs of people, if you come to see me in person, then you can bring all the family photographs.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And, you know, no two people are perceived in the same way because everybody's different. And I just say, you know, as I tell people, and I just use this one thing here that I always say, I take no person credit for my success, nor do I boost myself a medicine man, healer, or prophet. I do not claim infallibility, because I'm not a medicine man. Medicine man has very special gifts. Well, medicine women, they carry very special gifts. I'm just a seer. I only look into things. And I can talk, and sometimes they may say sometimes what kind of medicine that they should get to get doctored on. But I'm not a medicine man. It's just that sometimes the counselors say, you know, maybe she needs a little this type of medicine, but only on the advice of their doctor should they use this kind of medicine. And if they do, it works out real good. And, and years and years later, I found out what the woman who took me to be healed, the diamond, her name means first light.
Hmm.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. And so this is, that's some of the things that I do, you know, and as I say that, and then we go in to talk about someone on the other side. A lot of times, if the person, either their names have come up, or that people ask about that person, and we make a connection, and stuff like that. Now, I don't talk about auras on the telephone because I can't see your aura sit here and talk to them. But sometimes a person can come into this room when I'm talking to that say you are someone, and that spirit of that person can come in, not of the person I'm talking to, but could be a person that's gone on the other side. And they can come in and say some things, you know, do some, I can say, you know, I see your wife, and I see she's there, and this woman, she has either a dog or a man has a dog, and they're by the water, and stuff like that. It depends. If they want to come in, sometimes they come in this room, and they can stay right up.
Mm.
Yeah. So it depends upon, you know, everybody does that, but at different times. So I feel very special that the Creator used me to do things on a positive base. Yeah.
Well, we're really glad the Spirit worshiped it in that way.
Yes.
We know it can be a burden too. And,
well, it definitely can be.
I know it was.
I've woken up many times at night crying, and because I was shown something. And when you know it's a vision, because it's always a clock somewhere in that dream. And when you see the clock, and you see the time, because you see, God may tell you to choose the time, only God knows the day is going to happen.
Mm.
And when the mystery shows you that clock, you see that clock, and you see something's going to happen, and you can cry, you can walk the floor, and you can't change it, but it's going to go down. And that's how I get a lot of my predictions that come about, because I can be sleeping, and I can be sleeping, but yet I'm looking. And either I can be sitting, I'm just looking into the abyss, and then all of a sudden stuff starts coming. And this is how, you know, I get all of my, you know, a lot of my predictions. Some, you know, in my dream time, others, I could be just be sitting down, and I could be driving on the road, and I got a little notepad, I started jotting stuff down, or I could be sitting somewhere, and stuff come.
Hmm.
Yeah. I try to not to keep it, what is it? I try to keep the ones that I write about, it doesn't seem to be so witchy. I put that down on paper, because sometimes the stuff can come through a bit. Far-fetched. And it's like, see, where's this piece of paper? It's like some of the predictions that that's already come about. What they do on my website, they usually have my list of predictions, and also, they also have started carrying a list of stuff that's already happened, such as like the summer weather. Summer of 2003 would bring forth major power failures, blackouts along the East Coast in Canada. And then I would recommend generators for that. He came just a bit west. If you notice that big blackout that came last year.
That's right.
And the fall of the World Trade Center and the deaths of some 2,000 people. This was foretold. Let's see where they have that. How do they have that thing written here?
There was a Bosnian seer that foretold that, and there were several people that foretold that.
Oh yeah, I saw I foresee the breakup of the Taliban and the disappearance of Bin Laden to China, because the spirit says that Bin Laden is hiding out in China and all of these mountain crevices, because it all connects together, you see. So there's so many caves over there where he can hide in. And then I had said that the anthrax person is alone by the earth and male, the age of 15 to 62, with a knowledge of chemicals, and which happened to be. So these are some of the things. So there's a group of system there, but if your listeners would go to, you know, www.tedsilverhand.com, they can see the predictions that's for this year and the ones that have already happened.
Mm. Well, I was told in 1982, I woke up early in the morning, I was just told, the spirit told me that during the dark of the moon there would be an attempt on my wife's life. It said, you know, an attempt would be made on the life of Joanne Mary Anderson during the dark of the moon. So I woke up and I said, Joanne, you know, go grab a calendar and so forth. And a few weeks later, cancer was discovered in her right breast. They took the breast. But she died 13 years later, but I had all but forgotten about what the Creator had told me.
Yeah.
So 10 days afterwards, and I was almost afraid to go look at the calendar.
Yeah.
And I was in the home of my, you know, my future wife, and Joanna wanted me to marry Betty. And I was in Betty's mom's house, and I went over and looked at the calendar, and I said, oh my gosh, I said, guess what? And they said, what? I said, the 29th of April was at 11 o'clock, was right in the middle of a 3-day dark of the moon period. And but I was told in March of 98, I was told to write it down, I was told that 2005 will be known in the future as the year of the great havoc, because the weather will become so bad that it will shut down most all the computers on the planet. And wake up and write that down. Just told just like that. And so that's how it works with me.
Yeah, and in the year 2005, a lot of people are going to die this year because of a lot of changes, earth changes already started taking place. Even though the Hopi said last year, but Spirit says the purification begins next year. And this is on the verge, and this is why you're going to notice after the election, around the month of March, April, that's when the draft is going to be back in service. You watch, they're going to put it in.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly in 2005, around March, April, they're going to reinstitute the draft because they to keep that war over there, because that war is not going to end in Iraq. It's going to, they're going to be bringing more and more American soldiers. And this is what I tried to say in the prediction, that they ought to push this thing as much as they can. They ought to start pushing this thing into the United Nations hands and start backing away from this thing. This thing is going to get worse and worse, and that's what's going to lead us up to the Third World War.
Well, the Bible code said that 2000, 2004, 2006, and 2008 would be real years of, you know, possible trouble. And,
right.
But there's a long-standing prophecy that Bishop Coyle was a man who was ostracized from the Mormon Church, and he made a lot of predictions, and every single one of them came true, except he left some that haven't yet. And,
yep.
But he left some weather signs. He said that the year that the United States government would fail, he says it would be after an election, there would be a Republican in office. And he said that the weather signs he described line up with what's going on now. And but he said that the U.S. government would not even be able to collect taxes the following April. So we're in that situation right now too. You know, along with the Federal Reserve putting enough money into circulation to devalue the dollar by 20%, and a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah, well, I predict that. This guy, George Bush, is still going to be president next year. And he's going to be reelected. And see, when I made my predictions, I made them in the month of January of this year. I always make the predictions in January.
Mm.
And that's when I saw that he's going to be president again. And a lot of the problems, also problems with the Catholic Church, that's you think it's bad over in this country, you wait till it hits the Latin countries, because so much stuff was over there in Latin America and South America, and that's going to really take a punch to the Church, and that's going to bring, that could possibly bring the Church to its knees, to her knees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So many things are going to be, and this is why they said that Spirit says the year 2012 is when the next World War starts, and that's going to be with India and Pakistan, Israel and the Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are going to have to go to the aid of Russia, because China is going to bring in Taiwan and also bring in North Korea and South Korea are going to get together. And they have got to go after Russia, and we're going to have to go to Russia's aid.
You know, that's what Nostradamus said would happen.
Oh, really?
Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, Rene Norberg, in his book, I read it back in 83, his book called Nostradamus Predicts the End of the World. He said that he kind of described the Cold War. Well, first he described that Russia, which was the backwater of Europe at that time,
yeah,
and Hesperia, which is the New World, you know, the United States,
yeah,
you know. He said that these would become world powers in a couple hundred years. Everybody laughed at that. But he said that the two nations would be known as the Brothers of Aquilon, or the Brothers of the Eagle, and share communications over the pole.
Yeah.
And when the back in 83, I was in the military up in Oregon, and I was telling the guys, hey, I said, the wall's coming down, and they just laughed at me, and 89 it came down, and then they said, well, that's interesting. And he said that once we became allies,
yeah,
so we would fight, we would be enemies for a while, and then we would become allies, and that happened. Because we're in NATO together now. But he said it would throw the balance of power off in the world, and China would ally with the Arabs, and that's going on right now because we know this, and there are many there. And then he said that he saw a lot. Some people believe he was predicting some kind of a large meteorite or earthquake or something. He said a round mountain, 6 or 7 stades in diameter, would either hit the Indian Ocean or cause the rolling around of this object, whatever it is, would cause tsunamis to take out most of India and Western Africa, Western Australia, Eastern Africa, and India is the largest democracy in the world,
yeah,
and it's the only nation that has enough people to stop China if they should decide to invade. And they can just walk right across the Karakoram Highway, bypass China, link up with the Arabs, and walk right into Europe. And that is what you described. And they said that they would turn on... They said for a while they would be allies with Russia, and then they would turn on them, and they would... That we would be at war with the Arabs and the Chinese, and we would be allied with the Russians. Well, you know, everything's very tenuous right now because of Israel. Russia has, up until this point, had a pretty dangerous missile called Sunburn, but they have a new version of it, and they sold 200 of these to China that can either be mounted on a ship or a submarine that, even without a nuclear warhead, which you're able to carry, a 2,000-mile-an-hour missile flies 45 feet off the ground, 200-megaton nuke, or just a standard nuke, or just a standard warhead, have enough kinetic energy to sink an aircraft carrier. We've only got 6, and the Chinese have got 200 of these missiles, and they can shoot them from 60, 100, 200 miles away and take out our aircraft carrier. So there's a... Creator's got a real balance of power thing going on right now.
Yeah, that's true. And also, China has the largest army. I think they're working on the largest. They have the largest navy in the world.
Mm-hmm, a 500 million man militia.
Yeah, and they are now working on the largest Air Force or something. But I think that the reason why China is not going to try to bother us is because I think right now, if you notice, we got this free trade with China.
Well, we're financing all their...
Yeah, we're trying to say it's cheaper to feed them than to fight them.
Yeah.
But eventually we're going to have to fight them.
Yeah, eventually they'll be coming in here. I mean, we're being viewed as real real monsters because of what's going on. George Washington said we would be, he said that in his vision in Valley Forge, he said that our army would be out of the country and half of it would be destroyed in the first few hours. And the other half of the army would combine with the populace, and they would fight back to the center of the country, a war on three fronts. And just as we thought things were darkest, he saw a very bright light and thought that was divine intervention. But we will be invaded here in America.
Oh, yeah.
Mad Bear talked about the vision of the white snake and the red snake. And
Oh, yes.
Black snakes, very obviously, either Islam or aliens.
Yeah. I think it's going to be the Islamic in areas of the work on underground and the subways and things of that.
Mm-hmm.
if right now they are, the U.S. is doing the best it can do right now, but see, we have a thing of being led, becoming latched, like they did with the Pearl Harbor thing, and then with the world, the Twin Towers. And when you were talking about Nostradamus thing, about that the blue turbans were going to send a rocket, and no one could figure a rocket would come that far into the new city. And the rocket was not a rocket, it was a plane. They didn't bring the plane into the Twin City. I mean, to the new city, which is New York City. And this is why that I said that we used to always fight among ourselves so much, but I think that what took place with this World Trade Center, it brought all Americans together like never before. See, it used to be a division. The South didn't like the North didn't like the South. But now, if you go any place in the United States, basically, and everybody is together for one time in their life, we are pretty, we are a nation of people. Even if I notice it, if you're driving with New York tags down to Mississippi, everybody's really close to you.
Yeah.
I guess as long as your name is not Muhammad, you're okay.
Things have changed. They really have.
Yeah, it has changed an awful lot.
My mom grew up in Mississippi, and I was born in Minnesota, but I consider that home because that's people were Yankees and damn Yankees, excuse me. But yeah, all things have changed so much.
It has changed since that 9/11. It has changed where. I mean, sure they may say that. I don't even hear people say that they're rebels and they're Yankees. People just saying one thing: they're Americans. I think that brought everybody together.
We quit praying too soon, and I think you know we'll probably be attacked again. And
yeah, if we become too lax, and this is why that means that they're gonna have to be watching the railways, and you're gonna have to have. See, we as a society, we are a very open society. We are the only open society. I mean, U.S. and Canada, we are really open, and so we are vulnerable to people coming in and dropping little things, and you get on a train, you don't have to be searched.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to have identification papers like other countries. And so, I mean, a lot of people, when people talk about how bad this country is, they also got to look at the freedoms that this country used to have more, because more and more these freedoms are taken from us a little bit at a time because of this thing that's going through. And I do see that eventually they're going to have people going to be a little signals like on an airport, you to get on a bus, or get on the train, you're going to have to go through a metal detector. Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that during World War II, every train trestle in this country had an armed guard on it. We're so open.
We're so open. But we are losing that. We will have to lose that in order to survive as a nation.
Yeah, we'll probably end up going into martial law. That's what Martin Gishishioma said. That you know that the West would be flooded. There'd be martial law. And he said that the traditionalists have split from the rest of the Hopis, and he said they're gonna have to go start, because of the flooding. They'll have to go over to Four Corners and start another tribe.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so we are really, with so much is going down, but I still believe that we're going to make it. When you look at all of the stuff that we're going to be coming up against over the next 5 years, it's going to be a tough 5 years. And because after all, the people over the people over in Iran, they call us the infidels. I think that's what they named us or something.
Everybody's a hypocrite. Everybody's a hypocrite, though. I mean, they're terrorists. They came over here and they were womanizing and drinking,
But they don't have to womanize when they have 5 or 6 wives.
Yeah, that's right. Well, there was a woman, a Quaker woman back in the 30s. She was visiting the Cardston Mormon Temple before it was dedicated, people could come in. She had an open vision, and back then she was shown that this last war, World War III, would begin in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, And she said that it would be coincide with the major earth changes that would begin in the northwestern United States. And, of course, that's where Rainier's going on and Yellowstone. But she said the war would be between the so-called followers of Muhammad and the so-called followers of Christ. And that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, she said it right there, yeah.
But, I guess, I don't know, whatever you feel like you want to talk about. You've talked about your forecast for the year and how do you give your readings.
Yes, I did, about things that were going to happen. I still see some of the forecasts that I have put down together is that I still feel that there will be major earth tremors, but the earth tremors did happen over in Montana. I had a major earthquake to hit the fault lines that run through the western part of the United States between May and June of 2004, and it happened out in Montana. And I also have that there's going to be a health crisis for Barbara Bush, I think, this summer, early fall of 2004.
Did you predict anything for L.A. as far as health? There's something weird going on in Los Angeles, some kind of strange disease.
No, I didn't predict anything there about that. What's going on there?
I just heard a report that there was some people coming in off the streets with some kind of a strange disease that was going on.
No, I didn't pick the thing up like that right now. I'm sitting down my list here because I've got a high possibility of danger around areas such as Disney World, Vegas, and Atlantic City, and amusement areas, and major holidays in 2004. Extra security measures should be taken, in those areas.
Well, that's what Homeland Security is doing. They've been cautioning. A couple of weeks ago, I had a dream where I saw a bunch of buildings, like in a city, high buildings, and I saw the city, the buildings looked as if they were exploding from the top down, and really, really interesting. I couldn't see an earthquake, and I thought it was very unusual, but I heard the word Summer Israel. And then, and I've told several people about this, and the second day of summer, someone contacted me, and she works as a librarian for the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And she was telling me some things about that were going on and about migrations. And, you know, a lot of people laugh at my teacher, John Red Hat, because he is better than half Cherokee. What is that? 5/8 Cherokee.
Yeah.
And he was brought up in the Ketuvah Society. And these people, there's a fifth Cherokee dialect that had the R in it,
yeah,
where the other dialects. So he remembers his grandmothers and a freed woman that were his teachers back in the 30s and 40s. They pronounced Ketuvah as Keturah, with a trill R, and then as a teenager, he was befriended by Jewish kids after he moved to Tulsa, converted to Judaism, and became a rabbi. But he taught, and a lot of people just laugh us to derision, when he said he believed that Cherokee people were different. We have a different bone structure, and we're like Phoenicians. The only place you can find people with bones like ours is all along the coastlines all over the world, and then in the Appalachians surrounded by other peoples.
Yeah.
And Attacullacoola told the nation in 1750 that we migrated here from somewhere else. But anyway, this lady told me, I was asking her about Keturah, and there's only one mention of this third wife of Abraham and her sons in Genesis, but apparently there are other records Jews have that Abraham sent Keturah and her sons away, and she told me the direction, and that they have to pass over a large body of water, and that they would be gifted mostly with the gifts of herbalism and shamanism. And that's exactly what the Cthulhu people are all about. It's amazing.
But you know, my joke was that we were the, I guess, with the 12th tribe or the 13th tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And after we followed Moses, this is where my joke is, after we followed Moses for about 35 years, and we figured he didn't know if he was born, so we struck out on our own.
Yeah. Well, you know, half of the tribe of Manasseh didn't go into the Promised Land.
Right.
And there's one rabbi in Jerusalem that he's found descendants of Manasseh that still worship Yoah, or Yoah, like Cherokees worship Yoah. And he's found them, the Karen people in Burma, the people that have been so famous for drug, you know, opium, the Karens.
Yeah.
A lot of people in India, people in China. And of course Ethiopia, and they still talk about, you know, passing over the Red Sea and Pharaoh and the whole thing. So
but then what it's done, you always say that the Cherokee people come from these five stars from the 5th 20th star. He always put a star on his turban, and he says they came from another galaxy within the solar system around the areas of.
The Pleiades, you were talking about, you know, the seven pointed star. Well, that's interesting because the Hebrews have the same story. The idea that Indians are lost Israel to me never really fit. But what John Redahat and I came up with is that everybody goes back to Samaria, whether it's the Hebrews or the Hittites or the Assyrians.
Yeah.
Or the Egyptians, everybody goes back to that, between those two rivers, the Tigris and the Euphrates.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's just too many, I mean, we have the same ceremony at the same time of the year.
Right.
You know, with the, we build a little booth outside, and we go into the booth and bury our ancestors.
Yes.
And a green corn ceremony, bound and bush ceremony, that's the same time the Jews are having the same kind of ceremony. So,
yeah, right.
you know, who knows?
Yeah, that's true because it's like what they say is what makes all the native people all the same is that we is what keep us all the same is ceremonies and tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what no matter what part of the United States you go to, or Mexico, or parts of Canada. For Native people, that we are people of ceremony and tradition, and the Jewish people are too. But I just know, you know, like my people, I mean our people, that we believe in Mother Earth, and also the great mystery, Mother Earth, the water, the moon, the sun, because everything is done. By the moon, because Grandmother Moon is so powerful.
That's right.
And so is the great. Well, as we thought, the great mystery is everything.
Out in a few miles from where John Redhat lived, on one of the Zuni reservation, or I guess it was the Acoma reservation. Anyway, living in Mexico, there is a stone called the Decalogue Stone, and it is. The Ten Commandments written in the Phoenician language. Now, the Phoenicians were people that stayed in their ships. They were known to be pagans. In other words, they practiced earth religion. They had red skins. They had a special red clothing that only they knew how to manufacture. And they stayed in their ships. And there was Turkish admiral, apparently about the time of Columbus, or shortly thereafter, that had a map. His name was Piri Reis, and the map was a very exact representation of the actual topography of Antarctica, but only without the ice. And that topography wasn't known until the early 80s, when we had the technology to look under the ice and see. So there's been an ice cap down there for 4,000 years. So apparently the Phoenicians have been in their ships for 4,000 or 5,000 years, who knows?
Yes.
And then there's a story about the ancient sea kings. There have been Phoenician ships that have been found in Catalina Island and in Los Angeles, and apparently they used to go off to get pitch out of La Brea tar pits. And you know, the Cherokees, we always had to have an outlet to the sea.
Right.
And so it's, and the ethnologists, you know, they've looked at our skulls. They call them dolichocephalic or long-headed. And, you know, we're totally different from all the Indians in North America. Our bones are not like them. And then there's literally dozens of other parallels with ceremony and language that's similar. A lot of people have said we're Hebrew. Everybody goes back to Samaria.
Yeah, we everybody had to start someplace.
Yeah, we're all related.
All related.
We had to start somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
But what clan are you?
Bear.
Okay, so you're, it's no wonder you know so much about
it. I
corresponded with one of the Bear clan mother about 2-3 years ago in North Carolina. I can't remember her name. Sweet lady.
Uh-huh.
Very sweet lady. And I guess she had an internet connection for a while, and but I know Bear was sure working hard to try to get you guys. Whatever happened with the recognition thing with between you and Six Nations? Because you know the Munsees, the bunch that I guess are over in Wisconsin. I guess they ended up joining the Six Nations, but a lot of them kind of look at them like overnighters because they've only been in the Confederacy for about 100 years.
Yeah, well, the Six Nations recognize, you know, they recognize us from North Carolina. I've been out of North Carolina for about 10, 15 years. I live in upstate New York. And, but you see, you got to remember the Tuscarora, we were chased out of North Carolina in 1712.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up coming, we had sent runners up to talk to the Delaware people,
mm-hmm.
and they couldn't accept us because they had just made a peace treaty with William Penn. It was very shaky, mm-hmm. and they were so afraid to accept us. So more runners had to be sent up to Five Nations,
mm-hmm.
because 1,000 years before that, we were a part of Six Nations. And but before Five Nations could take a vote, we had to get out of North Carolina.
Because the Cherokees were chasing you out.
Cherokees were chasing us because, see, what happened was the militia, they said that if the Cherokees would wipe us out, they would be left alone.
Mm.
And so the Cherokees tried to be more white-like.
They did.
They had farms and they had slaves and stuff. And so what made us fight all the time, the Tuscaroras, we were the darkest of all the nations.
Yeah.
So they tried to make us slaves, but we were always had to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so by the time that runners were sent and for them to vote, we had to scatter. Some of us went into the swamps, and the other of us, other of our people, come up to Pennsylvania and spread into Magua, and then some spread up around Bear Mountain,
mm-hmm.
outside of New York City,
mm-hmm.
and then from Tamagua, we came into the areas of around Finger Lake area, the
mm-hmm.
Finger Lake area,
mm-hmm.
and which we came to the west and toward the Seneca. And the Seneca people give us land, but then the farmers, the white farmers up here, took that land from us and forced us off. So then we had to scatter. Some went into Six Nations to Five Nations and squatted there. Others had to go around Niagara Falls.
Mm-hmm.
And then the state of North Carolina petitioned the state of North Carolina to give them at least $30,000 to buy that land, which is around Niagara Falls, called Lewiston.
Mm-hmm. That's where Niagara was from.
Yeah, and that's where they bought that land with the $30,000. And then what happened, which a lot of people don't know, but in years later, the land down in Murphy County, Chief Clount and some of the other chiefs came back down. And what little land we had left that we were still squatting on, they sold that behind our backs to private people.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
There is a growing movement of people who are deciding to make their lives better. At LifeVantage, we're in the business of change, of improving quality of life globally and restoring the ability to make dreams a reality. Your quest for personal fulfillment begins here. Our flagship product, Protandem, the Nrf2 Synergizer, is the key to fighting oxidative stress. This daily supplement, comprised of natural ingredients, activates the body's antioxidant enzymes to eliminate free radicals, which cause oxidative stress. Protandem has been tested in the laboratories of renowned universities such as The Ohio State University, LSU, and the University of Colorado, Denver. These studies found on PubMed.gov, the U.S. government's online scientific library, clinically show that Protandem reduces oxidative stress.
When I saw that Protandem reduces oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days, I was all in for the rest of my life.
Everyone begs us for science as an industry. Where's your proof? Well, we have that also.
LifeVantage is devoted to advancing Nrf2 science and leading the fight against oxidative stress.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
So we got double whammy. And you see, in the other hand, about it was a man that was sort of taken from us. It was sort of like we had a rattlesnake problem there anyway. But then the white farmers could never really use that land in Bertie County. But in other words, so I used to hear my grandmother talk about what her grandmother said, how she had, her mother had like 15 kids, and the bears, and we eat them up in swamps. and what would happen was that when they would come up onto some of the plantations, that the slaves would give us their old clothes and shoes and stuff, and we'll go back out into the swamps. And that until, I think, we became citizens, all Indian people became citizens in 1938, they made us citizens of the United States. I guess getting us in time for the whole First World War. And so, at that time, a lot of the people come out of swamps and came back and tried to claim land or tried to get certain things. Now, but that's all, but we had a really rough time.
Yeah, I know you did. You know, the Cherokees, you're very right. We had a lot of land, and our chiefs felt that if we would appease, we were told the white ball was coming. We were told that we'd split up after the white ball came, that we'd split up into factions and families, and I mean, when there was agreement between all the tribes in Oklahoma, we were the only, after, in 1865, after the Civil War, we were the only tribe that refused to bury the hatchet within our own nation. So you have, it's terrible. Civil War. We had a Civil War before the whites had a Civil War.
Yeah, but I think that, the Cherokee people, there was one general, a veteran general.
Stan Waukee. Stan Waukee.
Yeah, okay. And now I think the Seminoles were the last one to sign a peace treaty on the throne. And in Florida, Mississippi, and that was signed in 1948, because so many of the soldiers died trying to get to the Seminoles.
Yeah, Billy Bowlegs was their leader. He was at one point he formed a band and told them, hey, we got to quit fighting. Because my fifth grade grandfather was fighting with him. My fifth grade grandfather fought alongside Dragon Canoe, and they got down into southern Alabama, because actually the Seminole were actually Creek people. But he said, look, we got to stop doing this because they're killing all of us. We got to stop fighting and start teaching them